Welcome into the second playoff edition of Shark and the Dog. This is our first episode actually recapping games. We gave you the preview episode last week talking about the Bees going into the series against the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Celtics going into the series against the Jimmy Butler-less Miami Heat. We didn't quite know the opponent yet when we were talking last week. We were thinking it was the Heat. Now we know. We're up 1-0 in that series. Bruins, tough one last night. Split in that series. We're going to start with the Bruins. We're going to go into the Celtics as we prepare for a big night tomorrow night with the Guardians and Red Sox leading us off at 6 p.m. and then going right into Heat, Celtics, Bruins, Maple Leafs. So let's get us started here on this recap portion. To my right is the Shark himself, Mr. Dave Nardella. Dave, how are you?
I know last week I said it was the best time in the year, but it's also the most stressful time of the year.
Big time. Wouldn't have it any other way. Out in the great state of California is Mr. Matthew Kovach with us. Matt, how are you?
Do you think we can get Andrew Ference to play for the Bruins tomorrow?
Would love that. We would love to have him flipping off a Canadian crowd after he takes control of them. And in the Granite State is the dog father himself, Mr. Paul Murphy. Paul, how are you?
Very good, John. Thanks for having me.
Of course. I'm your host, John Murphy. Let's get right into it. Dave, if we had done this episode on Sunday morning, it would have been, or Sunday evening, we'll say, after the Bruins win game one. Was it 5-2 or 5-1?
5-1.
5-1 in game one against the Maple Leafs, where they absolutely manhandled them. Jeremy Swayman played amazing, went to 5-0 on the year against the Maple Leafs with that win. Jake DeBrusk, my X factor for the series, gives you two goals. You get a ton of secondary scoring, something you've struggled with all year. If we had done that episode Sunday night, we would have been predicting a 5-6 game series.
For sure.
Instead, we're doing this episode after having a 2-1 lead. Late in the second period, giving up a power play goal and then losing the game on a flipped pass to one of the best players in hockey, in Austin Matthews. And you're tied 1-1 going into Toronto tomorrow, and the momentum has shifted in this series, and we're back to the goalie platoon, and Swayman's going to start tomorrow. So what are your thoughts on the Bees now that we're tied 1-1?
I'll give you a glass half full take here. You lose 3-2 yesterday, and I thought this was not a good game at all for the Bruins all around. You get a power play goal. You know, you really didn't get any threatening scoring chances 5-on-5. Your top two lines haven't been great this series. As you said, a lot of secondary scoring. You lose your top penalty killer in Peak, who's out week to week. It sounds like he's going to be out for the series.
This is glass half full.
Well, the first part was. But you only... Hold on. This is the concluding take. You only lost the game 3-2. And you saw Matthews and Tavares both score last night. So, yes, you know, we are 1-1 going into Toronto. You're going to need to win one there, or else it's going to be very difficult to win the series. But all things considered, you only lost that game 3-2. Your goaltending's been excellent. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, you continue that. But you know, I think it could have been even worse. It could have been a 5-1 game last night, but you only lost 3-2. So that's the glass half full.
I'll give you a little half full. That was good, Dave.
I'll go into negativity in the next day.
Yeah, absolutely. We will have our Frank Costanza airing of grievances with all of the players who have been absent or have let us down. Not only in these two games, but we'll even go into prior series and how we have some good history over the last 4 years of how little the Bruins have done in the postseason and how some of those players have factored into that. My half full is that the three goals that you gave up to a great scoring team were all your fault. You go up 1-0 in that game after a great Geeky Pastrnak. Even Jack was fooled, thought it was David Pastrnak who scored that goal. You go up 1-0, 14 seconds later, your defensemen are flailing at the puck to get it out of the zone, can't clear it, gets past Ullmark. I don't put that one on him. And then the second goal, you give up one to a high stick on Bertuzzi, and you come right back, and Shattenkirk, DeBrusk can't clear it, Shattenkirk doesn't get in front of it, and ends up blocking Ullmark. I don't even really blame Ullmark for that one either. And then the third one was you've got in the neutral zone, guys just standing around, and it allows the Maple Leafs to set up shop and flip one 50 feet in the air to one of the best players in the world, and McAvoy gets caught on his heels, who's supposed to be your best defenseman, one of the best defensemen in this series, in the league, and you look foolish, and he gets past Ullmark. A great, great goaltender maybe gets you that save, but that's... If you want to get on him, maybe you could, but I really don't blame him for that game. He's way down on the list of issues with that game. He kept you in that game that could have been a 7-2 game, the way things went. So that's my half fault, is that you gave them all those goals. So just don't do that and keep them to one or two. You have a shot to win this because you're going to struggle scoring over there. So, Matt, thoughts on the series thus far?
Well, when I see John Tavares score, I'm reminded that the Boston Bruins, certainly thought that they were in the running to sign him a few years ago, and that they have not signed a free agent of consequence in over 20 years. George W. Bush was the president of the United States, comfortably in his second term, not like, just at the end, doing the pardons and stuff like that. It was the heart of the W. Bush term.
All right.
The second W. Bush term, last time the Bruins signed a big free agent. Guys, the D-Core was just pathetic in that game last night. You're not defending the slot. You're not defending the point, for that matter. I mean, Shattenkirk, with that regular season, that was an October effort on the block shot.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at this team, I was telling you guys, everybody loves Matt Grizzlick. I thought that was a terrible penalty to take. I mean, yes, I understand what Dave was saying off air. It may have been a soft call for, April hockey, playoff hockey, but give me a break. Yeah, I mean, you just cannot go and broadside the other team's captain right in front of your own net and not expect it to be called or get upset when it's called. And Grizzlick knew it was a bad penalty. Two bad penalties for too many men on the ice. I was trying to give the team a mulligan because one of them was at the change between periods. That was really upsetting. And then again, you're so paralyzed by this two goalie tandem. And I'm sorry, this is not the 1972 Bruins with Cheesy and Eddie Johnston. You have a guy in Jeremy Swayman who can't lose to this team. He's beaten them five times this year, including three or four times this year, including three in the regular season. Why would you even mess with that karma? Why would you even give goal scorers like Austin Matthews a good feeling and saying, man, the guy that I just, was.
Matt, I know, but are we winning that game 2-1 last night if Swayman's in?
I don't think so. I don't know, and maybe not. But, I mean, sports are such a mind game. I mean, it's not video games, as we all have seen for so many years. And when you give a massively talented goal-scoring team a break by literally benching the guy that stonewalled them two nights earlier, that's – I don't care what you say. I mean, that's a good feeling in the other room when those guys didn't have anything to feel good about after Saturday night, and everybody thinks it's same old Bruins and Maple Leafs, and you're just dominating them. So, I mean, those are my initial, I guess, gut reactions. But, I mean, getting back to what I said, though, about Tavares, I mean, he's so unbelievable. He's so much more in control than your captain is. He feels like a legitimate leader. And that would have been a guy that would have been a franchise-altering signing a few years ago. And then, John, you and I talked about this earlier. The last two significant free agents the Bruins have signed, Chara 20 years ago, amazing, David Backes. That's it. And again, the reason you don't win is because you're just dead in the water on free agents. And you're not really developing guys anymore either. And then when you go out and make trades, you trade for Hampus Lindholm. What a Don Sweeney's.
All right, we got to keep it going with the recap, Matt. We're talking a little bit of revisionist history here. Paul, do you think it was more the D or your stars, which is why you didn't win that game last night?
Well, the stars. There's only three names, forwards that get mentioned if you watch the broadcast. Geeky, Beecher, and Pasternak. The rest of them, I don't know where they are. Coyle, I can't jump on him because he plays hard every game. It's not.
What about, lose what about the faceoffs, Paul? 7-for-21. That's terrible.
It's overrated. How's that? No, Matthews was fantastic. I understand that. John, it's not. The reason they lost, They didn't lose because of the goaltender. And it is a marathon, Matt. They play like 30 games in the playoffs. So no Bruin is playing all those games. So I think he's just going to get used to it. Every other game, they're going to change him up. The guy played very well. I mean, it was I shouldn't say lucky because it was a nice play to pitch it over McAvoy's head. But and another thing, we had zero chance of getting Jonathan Toews. I mean, zero, Tavares, zero. He was either going to the Islanders or hometown to Toronto. So you could forget that thought. We didn't lose because of the captain either. It's only one game, half full. Let's go to Toronto.
I like it. Let's talk about some of the people, Dave, who have been absent in this series or that we need to see more from. I can't get on DeBrusk. He had a bad game two, but he had a phenomenal game one. So I hope we are asking four goals of him. He's halfway there. We could use one of them in Toronto. One other guy I would love a goal from in Toronto, one of these two games, Dave, is Mr. Pat Maroon. I think that would be an absolute spark if he can just get a garbage goal in one of those games. McAvoy, Dave, thoughts?
That was my X factor coming in the series. I said he's really going to show up if the Bruins are successful. He's going to get a lot of credit for being the best defenseman in the league. But, I mean, without Brandon Carlo, this series would be – I don't even think
he's
he would –
He's been
terrific. I don't even think he – You know, you might not even win game one. He's been so good. He's really stepped up his play, and he's a true playoff player. Obviously, the concerns you saw last night where, he plays hard, and he's gotten injured the last however many series we've played. So you hope he can stay healthy. I was saying this pre-show, we lost, Andrew Peak, who is, against a team like Toronto where their power play is one of the best in the league. And they get on a power play, it's you got to hope you need a guy that you can rely on in the penalty kill. And he was the guy in the last, since the trade deadline, he's been a huge acquisition. Now you're going to ask, unproven guys like a Wotherspoon or a Shattenkirk to kill penalties. It's going to be really tough road if you let this team get on the power play. And, McAvoy, I get it. He eats a lot of minutes, and he's got a tough assignment. But I know we can see more out of him. He was trying to get into the play offensively the last couple games. I'm still hopeful that he will in Toronto score a big goal or make a big hit like he has in prior years, and he'll get back on track. I'm hoping that was just kind of a one game, but we really need McAvoy. Lindholm, I think. We've seen enough of Lindholm that he's just not built for the playoffs.
I will say this. Lindholm, the first 30 minutes, some of the worst hockey I've ever seen. He did have a good second half. I haven't heard anyone say that today. There were times when I was watching last night in the second half of that game where he was actually affecting the game positively. So I will give him that, and I hope he can carry that over to the next games. But in his first 13 playoff games as a Bruin, wildly underwhelming, he got his first point.
Yeah.
In those games. Dave, throw out a quick stat for us. How many goals does Bradley Marchand have in the last 2 months?
Four goals
in the last 2 months. So you're going to need something from him, too. He's given you how many assists this series?
He's given you three assists. So
that's not bad. That is not bad, but we are going to need some goal scoring from our captain. I was one of the outspoken people saying that his captaincy was so important and going to be amazing for this team. Yet to show itself in this series, I think I'm hoping that him getting slashed by a former teammate, did he sell it a little bit? Yes. But I hope that gets his teammates going a little bit and we get a little bit of that pesky Brad Marchand and we get a goal out of him in the next game. Anything on Coyle before we send it to Matt?
No, I think Coyle had despite the faceoffs, I think he had a decent game last night. I do think he's a guy that will score a big goal too because he's got the silky hands. He can score in tight spaces, which you're going to need. It seems like Samsonov really, he recovered well after that game Saturday night, and their goaltending has been pretty terrible in the last 2 months. So it was huge for him to have that game. You gotta bring way more pressure. I know it's kind of a corny take, but you got to bring way more pressure and pucks to the net.
to get to score on this guy because he definitely got comfortable in the second and third period last night.
I like it. How do you get more time of possession, Cove? Because that's what killed us last night. We were just chasing the puck all night. What are we going to do to spend more time in our offensive zone?
Well, you would say to have more selective shots, but that's not Jim Montgomery's style. I mean, Montgomery said it over and over that he, you know, wants quality shots. He doesn't want guys just, you know, hammering pucks on net all the time. So, you know, if that was not the team's philosophy, especially when they're cycling the puck around, then you would say, okay, hey, you know, don't blast it on the goalie the first time it gets on your stick. Look around and try to make a play. But, you know, I'm just not sure, you know, what the solution is there. But Jim Montgomery, who was hired to be, you know, a power play czar, a goal scoring czar for this team behind the bench, I mean, God, he just looks like a shorter, younger, stockier version of Claude Julien. I mean, seriously. And the team looks like that. Let's put it that way. The team looks like that. So, you know, for what it's worth there. But you got, I was extremely negative. You guys were all positive. And I know you guys are going to get negative now, so I'm going to flip back to the positive just to be contrarian and just talk about how much I love Morgan Geeky and that he's been one of my favorite players on the team all year and that you need – and again, you really need the Morgan Geekys, the Pavel Zakas. Those are the guys that you really, really, really need. You need somebody like that to be a difference maker. You really, really, really do. And – I understand what Paul's saying about the rotating of the goalies, and that's part of the team, and it just is what it is. It's just part of the team. It's just very, very deflating because I've seen Linus Ullmark in the playoffs each of the last 2 years, and he's been benched essentially each of the last 2 years. And I love having a really solid backup tender, and maybe somebody to throw in there. You know, if Swayman gets rocked, and again, John, you're right. You may not win that game if Swayman plays last night because the way the rest of the club played, but gosh, I just do not like taking them off the hook. I feel like that's akin to going to the bullpen when the starter is just throwing zeros up there and nobody can hit the starter. And even though it's, you know, analytics and proper to go to the bullpen, everybody is excited that you went to the bullpen because you couldn't touch the starter no matter what. So just a baseball analogy on ice.
But it's still, we broke down all three goals, and they're all the defense's fault. And just these stupid breakdowns.
I understand that, John, but again, these games are mental. There's a good confidence feeling. Why when the Celtics are playing, they played somebody without their best player a couple weeks ago in the regular season, you could see it was throttled down. I mean, again, the Celtics slept walk through a game in Milwaukee a couple weeks ago where they just got absolutely hammered. It's all about your effort and the way you feel and comfortability and stuff like that.
But I still feel like if we talk about the goaltending and try and place any blame and second guess that, we are letting the defense off the hook for just a horrible game. The puck got controlled, and if they are so mentally weak that taking Swayman out is what deterred them from taking control of that game, then we should just pack it in. So I need one more bad performance out of one of these goaltenders to poo-poo the platoon idea, because I think there's still a chance it could work. I'm not using last night's game as my example. Let's do a new segment where we are going to basically do a tryout to try and sell this podcast to a gambling app. And so who would you put your money on to score a goal in the next game, Cole?
Who would I bet to score a goal for the Boston Bruins in the next game? I would absolutely say, Brad Marchand. We'll score a goal there, and not just because he's due, and not just because he's the captain. But I think he knows it's important. I would say Marchand or
no, it's one player. So we got to kick it to Paul. Paul, who would you bet to score a goal next game?
Charlie Coyle.
Ooh, I like that, Dave. I have Pavel Zacha.
I like that. He was excellent yesterday, too. I'm going to go with contrarian view. I think it's going to be I'm going to go McAvoy. I think you need a defenseman goal, a little energy goal, whether it's a power play or a shot from the point. We need it.
We were going through.
And he's had some good goals against Toronto in the past, so.
No, it's well said. We were going through the post-Game 7 loss to the St. Louis Blues in 2019 and what the Bruins have done in the postseason. We've just been in such a fog since that Game 7 loss and how close we were that it's almost like we don't even realize how horrible some of these teams have been in the postseason. We have two series victories. We haven't made it past the second round. And so one series you don't want this to be is the basically fans allowed back in the building, New York Islanders lose in five series. That's what you don't want this to be. You need this to be an old series against the Maple Leafs where, sure, it goes seven, but you find a way to bully them in the end. Paul, prediction for game three.
4-2 Bruins.
Love it.
I like that. Cove, prediction for game three.
3-1 Toronto.
I'm 3-2 Toronto. But I'm positive that they come back 2-2. Dave, prediction for
I'm going 3-1 Boston. I think they tighten it up defensively and you get another stellar goalie performance.
Very nice. Split across the board there. So that was a good 21 minutes on the Bruins to start the show here. Let's go right into the Celtics. Not to say that we don't have much to talk about with this team, but it's just going to be a lot of prediction because you're playing a Jimmy Butler, Terry Rozier-less Heat team that looks depleted. You should manhandle this team. You did the other day. Did it get a little sketchy at times? Absolutely. And what I will say as someone who was in the building, which we do always have to mention of an update, I am 5-0-1 in the building this year between the Celtics and the Bruins. That is a huge shift from years prior, so it's something that needs to be acknowledged. I will likely have to go in and save the Bruins series at some point. I will let you know when I deploy tickets in that series to save the series. But, Dave, I will say this. The Celtics fan base is a battered fan base. Of any time where we would be up 15 and that lead would shrink to like 6, building would go absolutely silent. And they knew they were just going to cough it up. And the thing that stuck out to me was when a Peyton Pritchard, a Sam Hauser, a Derek White would hit a big shot to you know, breathe a little oxygen back into the building. It made me so happy that we don't have Marcus Smart and Grant Williams taking up minutes and trying to play hero ball to
taking over huddles.
Exactly. That to me felt like the biggest difference in a playoff game against a team that's depleted, but it's just something I noticed in the game the other day. Any thoughts on the series thus far? I know it's only one game.
Yeah. If you watch that game and you look at the box score, you are very encouraged just by the Celtics' performance because, you know, you didn't have one guy getting all the points. You got a lot of contributions from everyone. You got, you know, 10-plus points from, I want to say, like 5 or 6 or 7 different players. You know, you had Derek White play great. You know, you had Tatum and Brown play great. You had Porzingis play great. It was just what made me unsettled, which has been the conversation I've had with everyone talking about the Celtics in Boston. Is just, you know, you should have won by 30 that game, but you let them back in it. You won by 20. You look at the box score, like what was wrong with this game? It's just that weird feeling of letting them back in it. You know, one thing I was noticing during the game was just like the starters play, or, you know, your top guys, I understand it's the playoffs where you have a smaller rotation, but your top guys played essentially the whole game. It would have been nice if you had, you know, stuck to that 30-point lead, 6 or 7 minutes left. You know, you're hoping to go to the NBA Finals, and, you know, you got to keep starters in.
Matt has a very, I would say, opposing opinion on the 32-point lead going down to 15. Matt, what were your thoughts on that? I know you had given me some opinions on that earlier.
John, I thought it was good because I think there's a lot of complacency that can set in. I think if the Celtics are en route to the Eastern Conference Finals lose more than 2 basketball games, then you have some cause for concern. But this allows Joe to keep coaching and allows him to keep that dressing room humble, because you can come in there and say, guys, listen, I don't care if they don't have Jimmy Butler. This is still the team that's put you out, what, two of the last four seasons, and you had a 30-point lead, and they whittled it down to 13 or 14. So, you know, you can't get cute, and especially you can't get cute against that team. And again, I'm just doing a mock-up of, you know, what Joe may say to these guys, but at least it allows no room for complacency to set in. And, you know, when you look at the way that this team played down the stretch too, they played very uninspired because they knew that they had everything wrapped up. They, you know, I said that there were a couple games where Jason Tatum looked like he was playing not to get hurt. Like he was like daintily walking around the court again in that aforementioned Milwaukee game. So I liked it. I didn't mind it. I thought it was convenient. It was the playoff winning equivalent to the John Murphy good loss. So that was just, you know, my outward feel. I didn't walk away from that game thinking, oh my God, same old Celtics who cough up leads and, you know, can't protect them. And the other thing that I liked too was, you know, everybody saw what Caleb Martin did at the end of the game, and JT, my God, you know, the guy just complains every time he goes to the basket and doesn't get a call, whether he was mugged or whether somebody sneezed on him. And it was great to see him get decked like that and walk away and have JB take care of it. And I thought that that was a real maturation moment for, you know, these guys who are still incredibly young, which we forget about because, you know, Brown and Tatum both hit the NBA at 18 and 19 years old. So.
Well said. The series I would like to compare this to, and I hope it doesn't get any worse than this series, is when we lost to the Brooklyn Nets in 2021, when we didn't have Jaylen Brown. Tatum, I think, dropped 50 in a game, the only game we won. You lost in five to a very good Nets team. That was the team that was supposed to be the team of the NBA for the next decade, and they fell apart just because of the personalities on that team. But they were a really hard opponent that we played in the first round as a 7 or 8 seed that year, and just because of injuries, we had no shot. I think the same thing should be true for the Heat. I think they'll give you a couple of good games here. Shouldn't go more than 5. If it goes 6 or 7, that's a total failure. Yes. And just wasting your time, because you're going to need all the energy you can possibly hold on to get into some of these series against even what the Cavs are doing, especially what the Knicks are doing. If you saw what MSG was like last night in the last 30 seconds of that game, how is this team who has struggled in those moments in the final minutes going to face up to a team like that? So conserve as much energy as possible. Get out of the series in 4 or 5. Paul, did you watch the game on Sunday?
Yes, I did. Okay. Yeah, John, you just stole my thunder, that comment. I mean, Tatum and Brown were in the game with like 30 seconds left in the game. I swear to God, they worry more about the point spread than they do. It was an 18-point lead, and you could hear the crowd going, oh, geez, if the guy gets a three, they're gonna cover or something like that. You know, get those guys out of the game. You're right, John. They should be trying to sweep this team. This team has knocked them out more times than they can possibly dream. They need to go home. They're depleted. Bury them. Bring extra shovels. Do whatever you have to do, but get rid of them. You're going to conserve. They had a thing today on the NBA Network about the Knicks. Now, you know, now that they got that free game from Philly last night where Philly got cheated, although it was a fantastic finish, though. How many games they'll play if they get to the finals, if things line up that way, you know, having to play Boston and all these other teams. They'll play 30 games. So that's too much for a team. They're not going to make it. Celtics need to be smart. Get rid of some of these games now and just don't play them.
Yes, I agree, Paul.
I like it. Did anyone disappoint you in that game, Paul?
Yeah, you know, Matt's right about Tatum. Every time he comes down, you know, it's like a Broadway play with him. He's fallen down. They said Caleb Martin's not a dirty player. They said it on the thing. I heard it on the radio. He's not dirty. Things get tangled up. I know it was kind of a tough play, but I like it when they just move on. Just move on. You know, Miami has like 8 players. Why are you worried about that? And why is he in the game?
It's a good point. Part of why they were in the game, I know not at that time, but they did have to stay in there because of coughing up a 32-point lead. Yeah. It got pretty spooky there when that 32-point lead with 9 minutes to go became 15 points with 4 minutes to go. It was silent in that building until I forget who it was who hit. I think it was Derek White, who had a very quiet 20 points in that game. He had a great game. Porzingis was great in that game. We haven't mentioned him. But one guy that did disappoint me, who I have high hopes for in game two, is Drew Holiday. I feel like every time that guy went to the basket, he was leaving points just rattling around the rim. And so when people say, don't just shoot threes all the time, you got to attack the basket, we missed a lot of we left a lot of points at the rim in that game. So thank God Sam Hauser and Peyton Pritchard and Derek White were able to extend some of those leads with massive threes. So I give them credit for how well they were shooting threes in that game, because they were attacking the basket and they were sucking at it. So I need them to be better at the rim, so they don't just have to rely on the threes in the next game. Dave, anything else going into game two tomorrow?
No, I was just going to highlight, I thought Hauser and Pritchard were great, and it's something that in years past, you know, we didn't really know what they were going to bring. And I think they're ready for the opportunity this year, and they've been great all year. And I think you're going to need them later on. So it was good to see them come out hot in that first game. But I think you really got to, you know, really don't screw around tomorrow. Take care of business, get another big win, go down to Miami and try and finish it out.
Well said. This team doesn't have a Ray Allen, but those two guys could be a better version of what Eddie House and James Posey gave you for outside shooting in 08. You would hope. That's a lot to ask, but just in watching a lot of recap footage, greatest hits going into this series, those are who two of those guys remind me of. Cove, anything else on the C's here?
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, thank God Danny Ainge and you know, another gift to the Celtics, Peyton Pritchard, and thank God Brad had the wherewithal to hold on to him last season when he was demanding a trade. I mean, again, very, very smart stuff, very cagey. And by the way, Peyton Pritchard is the advantage. Peyton Pritchard's like the poorest man's Jalen Brunson, a guy who came into the league and was not raw. Like I talked about Jalen Brown being raw. Peyton just needed to grow into his body a little bit and kind of figure out, you know, how his game assimilates to the NBA. But he was also just a very polished player. And, you know, when you can get your hands on guys like that, I mean, they're just immediate impact guys. And you feel so much better with Peyton and Sam Hauser as modern NBA players than a guy like Malcolm Brogdon, who, you know, reminded me of like John Bagley when he played for the Celtics, you know, 30-some-odd years ago. So, I mean, seriously, I mean, it just, you know, we can sit here and in a different podcast and we're talking about like the aesthetics of basketball and talk about how we hate the threes and it's ridiculous that Draymond Green and Marcus Smart have more career threes than Larry Bird and things like that. But, you know, you have to, as Tom Curran would say, you have to do business is being done. And that's the way the business is being done in the NBA now. And you need, I mean, guys like Sam Hauser and Peyton Pritchard are pretty essential, you know, when you're going to go on a title run. I mean, go ask Steve Kerr.
Well said. One thing I will throw out there is after game one against the Hawks last year, there was a lot of similar chatter about what we – not that the Celtics were the odds-on favorite last year. It wasn't the discussion like that. But it was around like, they're going to sweep this team. This is going to be easy. And we wasted our time in that series, coughing up two. The game three in Atlanta and then that game five at home when I think it was Murray who went off. And then you had to go fight for one in game six and you wasted time. Do not go down to Miami with a split series or anything stupid like that. Learn from last year's mistake. This team is even in worse shape than that Hawks team was. So don't screw around in this series. Paul, anything else on the C's?
No, looking forward to it.
I like it. I guess just in closing, we'll do East and then West. Dave, who scares you the most in the East right now?
The Cavs. They've been great. I don't know. They ended up winning last night, right? Because they were up a lot. But okay, yeah. They I mean, the first game they were great. Second game they were great. They got, you know, they've given you problems all year. They freaked me out. They freaked me out. So that the Cavs and then the West.
How could you not say?
Yeah, you got to say the Nuggets. They just you know, they were down 20 last night, come back and win, and they get the best player in the world. So. It's tough.
It's gonna be a tough road.
The Knicks are 2-0, and Brunson's had two of his worst games in the last few months in those two games, and they still found a way to win. So, if Brunson's hot I'm afraid of the Knicks, but I'm more afraid of that building. Of just like that, that is, if it gets in tight in the last 3 minutes and we're, you know, down three, up three, trying to preserve a lead type of thing, how are they going to perform in that environment? Because we went over all the losses on last week's episode of thing situations where we cough things up. How are they going to play in a tough environment like that? So my biggest threat in the East is Madison Square Garden. In the West, I got to go Nuggets. Cove, what do you have?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you got to beat the champs, and until the champs get beat, I mean, God, Nikola Jokic is so good. But I'm with you. I think that you have a, you know, kind of put a moratorium on losses, meaning that you can say you can only lose maybe 2 to 3 games max before you play game one of the Eastern Conference Finals, you know, no matter how that mixes in this series and hopefully another series. This is a lot different, though, than Atlanta. I mean, Trae Young is a viable NBA player. He would be a difference maker if he got traded to a team like the Lakers, you know, things like that. He'd be a difference maker on this team. There just are no, you know, difference makers on the Heat. It's Bam, it's Tyler Hero, and it's you know, a bunch of the guys that were role players last year that were killing you when they had Jimmy to lead the band. So I don't think that you're in any danger of seeing this turn into, you know, the Hawks series from 2008 or the Hawks series from 2023. Sure, it's tough to go play at MSG, but just like John's been saying all year that this team needs a buzzer beater so badly, you need some wins in a raucous environment like that to battle test you a little bit. And, you know, the final thing, and there's only a few more years that I can really say this, so I'm gonna hang on to this take as long as I can. You are still talking about guys who are really starting to begin to understand what it's like to be the leaders of the team and have to sit there at the table at the end of the game and answer all the good questions and answer all the bad questions and everything in between. And, you know, it's important to understand that there's a massive learning curve to that, massive learning curve. And that's where I do, you know, kind of tilt back to LeBron when he was saying a couple months ago where he said, God, I didn't win my first one until I was, you know, 27, 28. Michael, the same thing. You know, these guys are still very young in terms of, you know, their birth certificate, and they're also very young in terms of NBA experience. So you need those wins at MSG where the place is going crazy and JT comes in cold and knocks down a whole bunch of big shots. So, you know, bring on the Knicks and bring on MSG.
I like it.
And I hope Emily Ratajkowski goes to one.
All right. And, Paul, biggest threats in the NBA, East and West?
The West is, obviously, the Nuggets are unbelievable. I do want to see some of the other teams out there. I actually stayed up, I shouldn't tell you this, but I stayed up and watched Oklahoma City and New Orleans. It's got to be one of the, I can't believe they got to the 90s. They took so many threes and didn't make any of them. It was like 12 to 10 at the end of the first quarter. I said to myself, well, I said, I'm going to stay up just to watch because I don't know anything about Oklahoma City other that they're young. And maybe they'll give, you know, maybe in a couple of series they'll be there with Denver. But Denver is definitely the class of the league. And in the East, the Knicks are going to be a real pain. They shouldn't have won last night. That's terrible the way it came about. But it's just going to extend the series. Philly's going to figure it out. It's going to go back to 2-2. And they'll, you know, you're right. Philly may be tough enough to do it. We'll see if the Celtics are tough enough to go into that environment and knock them out.
Well said. Weird scheduling with the next few games. Dave hates it. We've got all, we'll say all three teams playing tomorrow between the Sox, Bruins, and Celtics. Same thing happens again on Saturday where, I mean, obviously the NBA staggers things longer than the NHL. It just happens to fall that way going from game 3 to game 4 with the Bruins. So it's a weird setup. You've got back-to-back games where both teams are going to be playing at the exact same time. It is going to be tough on people's attention spans, but I think it'll be a pretty fun overload. So maybe we get you an episode before games 3 and 4 of these series, but likely coming in early next week, recapping everything that's happened. So, gentlemen, thanks for coming on.
One final. It drives me nuts that the NBA takes 2 games off when they, you know, when they do these, you know, players don't play load management during the season, then they're taking 2 games off. And the NHL's going every other night. It's unbelievable. I get it. They want to do it for their TV contract, whatever. it drives me nuts. I'm sorry to end the episode like this, but it really, you know, play every other night. Do what the NHL does. Their scheduling's great. It really bothers me.
It didn't even make sense for the Celtics the way they're splitting the building. I don't know if a concert knocked them out on Tuesday and on tonight or something like that, but I thought that scheduling sucked. I'm with you, Dave. So, gentlemen, thanks for coming on. We will talk in the next few days.
Yes, go ahead, Paul.
Thursday is the NFL draft, and both New York teams are picking in the top 10, so they thought that would be a factor in the Knicks playing the 76ers, that people's attentions would be elsewhere. So maybe you can, in your next podcast, John, we can recap the draft.
I think that's quite possible. Matt, do you have any concluding thoughts that you'd like to throw in?
How amazing is our town that every other city in America would be salivating over having the number 3 pick in the NFL draft? It's draft week. The draft is 48 hours away, and we couldn't be bothered to mention football.
That's true.
Well said.
I mean, pretty incredible. And the NFL's, you know, I mean, the NFL is bigger than the Beatles. It's ridiculous. So there you go. We'll see you on Thursday night with Drake May. My God.
Gentlemen. Thanks, it's playoff time. Thank you for coming on. We will be back in the next few days. Enjoy the games. The heat is on.